Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show.
What's up guys, Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. I'm joined with our co-host, Coach Nick. Nick, how are we doing today?
I'm really well. How about yourself, Coach Steve?
I'm good, Nick. I'm good. You know, we're in week 5 of the challenge, and this week is episode number 54 of the Challenge Weekly Show. And, you know, we were so close making it week 5 and episode 55. Like, if that made it work, it would have just been chef's kiss, would have been perfect, don't you think?
I know, but the thing is, like, we've had the 2-2s, we've had everything. We would have had to have done an extra surprise pop-up podcast.
And, to make it work, yeah.
It just didn't line up.
No, that's okay. It's okay. We can't take all the wins, but episode 54 on week 5 is still always an exciting thing. But look, Nick, we're in week 5. We've just gone through the week 4 check-in weekend. And for many of us, we have just started and transitioned into the week 5-8 training and the 5-8 nutrition for this January challenge.
Yes, exciting times. A little bit of a shake-up. Your routine's going to be a little bit different because there's some different numbers to work towards now. So it's time to assess everything, I'd say, and get ready for the next phase.
That's right. And look, when we compare those training programs as a start, when we look at weeks 1-4, then 5-8, structurally and fundamentally, there isn't any massive major difference. And that is really the key to training programs, is that we don't want to, you know, completely overhaul and change everything. Sure, we need to have some variation in our program. Okay, maybe change like a bench press to a chest press, or maybe instead of doing a lat pull down, you're starting to do some chin-ups or something, you know, making some small changes. But on like the foundational level, like our training programs should not change really drastically, really massively. And the reason why is that we want our body to adapt to this new this stimulus that we're applying to it. And if we're constantly changing it over and over again, our body doesn't really get a chance to adapt to it, especially in like 4-week periods. If we're talking maybe, you know, 12-week or longer periods, great, we can change our programs completely, change, you know, the rep ranges or the total training volume, all these things. But on this shorter frame, it's much more effective if we focus on a similar program, similar movement patterns, and get really good at those things that our body can adapt to it. So if you're sitting there scratching your head or maybe expecting a really drastically different training program, my big tip to you is look past that, try to stay something more consistent, and then, you know, get better at what we're doing, and you will see those changes happen in your body.
Absolutely. Say, for example, if you're just learning how to squat for the first 4 weeks, you might have just been practicing just the general movement pattern. So now it might be time to start to load the bar up a little bit more. You certainly wouldn't want to go, okay, that's the end of squat, see you later, because you might just be starting with that. And if you're more advanced, you do know that squats are eternal.
They don't go away, right?
They don't go away, and they never get any easier. So I've got to say, you know, there's not many times that I haven't had squats in my program over the last, like, let's say 15 years. That's a long time. Lord, you were just baby.
Yeah. I was a teenage Steve 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Just figuring out how to squat. Yep.
So, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. But look, the same could be said about like our approach to nutrition as well, Nick. You know, when we are looking at that week 1-4 to 5-8, the most effective way to continue our nutrition strategy is to eat similar foods, right? You've been practicing how to, you know, prepare chicken or how to make a certain meal, or maybe you're really great at getting that routine down pat. You're doing meal prep on Sunday. You're buying the similar fruits and vegetables and, you know, protein sources, and you're making the same meals. The best strategy is to kind of keep doing that. Sure, we're human. We kind of get bored of eating the same foods over and over again. But, you know, just like squats, things like, let's say, chicken breast is a common staple in dieting. And, you know, there's lots of ways to kind of skin it and make it, you know, slightly different. So, you know, we can have lots of variety, even though we're eating similar foods. When we're looking at the differences in weeks 1-4 to 5-8, majority of us are experiencing a slight calorie decrease. That's those who are trying to build muscle, we're having a less of a surplus, and those who are trying to lose fat, we're having even more of a deficit. So most of us are reducing our food intake. So that might mean that, you know, instead of having 40 grams of oats, now your program is suggesting that you have 35 or 30 grams of oats for breakfast. Or maybe instead of having 130 grams of chicken, now it's suggesting you have 120 grams of chicken. So very small decreases over time, but those small decreases are the things that make the difference for us. So yes, there is quite a different nutrition program just for variety, but probably the most effective way to continue your nutrition strategy is to actually just keep eating the same foods, just slightly less volume, so slightly smaller portions.
Absolutely. And it's sort of, if you do that, you really start to learn the value of foods, because some people might say, wait a minute, I had this amount of oats, now I have such a tiny amount of oats. And then you just realize the caloric value of oats, and they actually are quite calorie dense. So then if you still want to have oats, you might need to then tweak something else in your plan so you can continue to have them. So you start to learn the value of things. And then you might go, wait a minute, those two huge bowls of oats that I used to eat might have been contributing to me staying the same with my weight. And even though it's healthy, you know, quote unquote healthy, because sometimes we think just because something's healthy, we might be able to eat as much as we want of it, but it isn't the case.
No, you're completely right. Mm-hmm. And you'll probably see that with some really funky numbers on your template. Maybe you want to have things like, I don't know, let's say avocado really high in fats, and fats are really calorically dense. So if you do want to have avocado, sure, no dramas. You know, you can have avocado. And for most of us, we know that avocado is, quote, a healthy food. You know, it's promoted as a health food, but you may find that you're only allowed to have a small amount of avocado, you know, maybe like 20 or 30 grams of avocado, which is like a spoonful. You could have that or an entire bowl of like salad or like a whole, you know, a range of different vegetables, and that equals the same amount of calories. So then you go, well, what's the point of having a spoonful of avocado or, you know, an entire bowl of vegetables? The choice comes to you. So if you're scratching your head going, well, this program is only offering me, you know, 10 grams of rice, there's no point in me even trying to cook rice. Maybe it's better to find another food that is of lower calorically dense value, so then you can have a lot of it. So then you can actually have a meal out of it rather than having a spoonful of nothing.
And I'll give you guys a hot tip. This is where pumpkin becomes your best friend.
Oh yeah.
Bit of punky, you know, you want to start to get these special foods in where you can eat a lot more of them for less value of calories. Yeah, so pumpkin's a special trick food.
Good old pumpkin. Pumpkin. That's what our baby George is eating at the moment, a bit of pumpkin.
There you go. So look.
So you could be like baby George and get some pumpkin.
If it's good enough for baby George, does he like his pumpkin?
He does. Pumpkin and sweet potato, he's kicking goals. He does not like mashed up peas. Big surprise there, right?
Not interested at the moment.
No, it's the real classic. Put it in his mouth and he just spits it back out. And you're like, oh, baby, get in there.
But he does like the pumpkin, so that's good, and the sweet potato. So you just get him onto the chicken breasts and he's good to go, really. Then you'll teach him a bit of Olympic lifting, won't you?
Yeah. He's got big hands, big feet. He's going to be a big boy.
Fantastic. Because, yeah, you just get him onto those snatches and stuff straight away, you know, the cleans and stuff, because then he'll just be amazing.
Yeah, everything else will be easy if you can nail those.
I know. I've got high hopes for baby George.
So do I. Look, yeah. Nick, we've also, yes, just gone through our week 4 check-in. We do have up until week 8 to do the week 4 check-in. So if you're listening to this and haven't completed your week 4 check-in, no stress, no dramas. You do have up until week 8 to complete your check-in. I always love that check-in period where individuals will post photos of their transformation. So let that be in their journal, let that be on social medias like Instagram, Facebook. But it's always like, you know, just really inspiring to see such big changes over that 4-week period. And, you know, you could see the smile start to come through on challengers' faces. And it's just really cool to see. So I love it. So if you did post a before and after somewhere online, chances are I've seen it. And, you know, big congratulations to you. You've put in some effort and you're getting some rewards. Again, if you're not seeing any changes yet, don't stress, no dramas. I want you to be consistent with the strategy that you're doing. Stay on the challenge, keep going, especially as we transition into weeks 5 to 8. And, you know, there may come to a point where we need to reflect on the strategy that we're using and start to talk to ourselves and go, okay, well, is what I'm doing working right now? And do I need to change something? And if you're unsure, reach out to us on the forum. You know, we're more than happy to help you in any way that we can. But often, you know, you ultimately know what you need to do to get better. And sometimes you need to document your process. So maybe you need to start collecting information about, you know, your sleep quality, how much water you're drinking, you know, how hard you're training, you know, how many steps you're doing a day. These types of bits of information are important, because then you go, well, I'm training really hard, I'm drinking lots of water, I'm getting awesome sleep, but I'm doing, you know, 5,000 steps a day. All right, well, maybe we need to get more steps in per day. Or maybe you're ticking all the boxes, but maybe you're just not recovering well because, you know, you live a really stressful life and that's impacting your recoverability. So we don't know exactly where you need to improve. Often you know where you need to improve, and you won't know unless you start documenting your journey. It's not too late to document, start to collect information, because what is measured, we can start managing that.
That's correct. And it's really ultimately about you auditing once again what's going on. So it's often the little things that you kind of know that you're doing, but you sort of think, oh, I'm doing such a good job that I'll let myself get away with that. And they're the little things that kind of count.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nick, let's move on to our non-scale victories for the week. So at NSVs, we love our hashtag NSVs. Nick, I think you found a couple this week. Who have you got?
Yes, I'd love to make a song up about NSVs. I'd like to play my guitar and say NSVs. But yes, I'll just learn the guitar first, so give me a year. All right, so first up, we've got Robert Sachs. Hello, Robert, how are you? So he's very good. You've interviewed him before, haven't you?
Yeah, we did a podcast with Robert. Yep. Never quit quitting was his quote.
Fantastic. So if anyone's interested in listening to your podcast with Robert, just go and search for it. But he says this: I'm counting this as an NSV. Looks like these straps. So they're his lifting straps. There was a picture of his lifting straps. Have gone as far with me on this journey of a million reps as they're going to. Luckily, it gave me a bit of warning that it was going to go, but still had to cut my last set short. So he had to say goodbye to his lifting straps because they finally broke. Now, that's a bit scary if that happens, because, you know, you really do put your trust in your lifting straps, but it is an NSV because it just shows you, you know, how hard he's worked, that his lifting straps are finally broken. So, you know, that's a lot of reps. I like that one.
Love it. Good on you, Robert. Keep going, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, I know. That's a bit of a bro one, but we love it.
We love it.
Me lifting straps. I think that's fantastic. Anything like that is just excellent. We love usage of equipment. All right, so we've got our good friend Nicola Gibb. Now, she is she put up a picture of her painting pants, and she said, pants fall off. This actually happened. I was painting in my painting jeans that I've had for years, and I was in the zone. I stood up really straight and my jeans literally fell to my ankles. Oh, what a feeling, as these jeans used to be tight around my waist and now fully zipped up, they fall off me. So non-scale victory for Nicola Gibb. Now, she's been around for a while. I've also interviewed her, so if you would like to listen to that one. And she's been a top 10. And she's just continually, you know, finding ways to improve and then encourage others, which is fantastic within our community. So excellent job, Nicola.
That's awesome, Nicola. Congratulations.
Yeah. Congratulations for your pants falling off. You might have to buy a belt. Maybe she could borrow Robert's old lifting straps.
And turn them into a belt. Yeah.
And now we've got Mel Cook. So Mel Cook. I trained chest yesterday and usually can't lift enough to make me really sore. Well, today I think a truck must have run over me while I slept. PBs in all lifts for this muscle group. So well done, Mel. She's really pushing the envelope and pushing her chest muscles to something different, to feel something. And I think, look, in all honesty, just from a technical point of view, for women, sometimes it's hard for us to engage our pecs, you know, on a bench press and just to know those muscles, and we're often not really sort of trying to recruit them as much as we might be with, you know, squatting and deadlifting and other stuff like that. So we're not, you know, a lot of women don't even think about bench pressing. So once you do start, you realize that there's a whole different muscle group there to use, whereas you guys are all over it. That's the first muscle group that you guys want to improve.
Yeah, chest and biceps, bro, all day.
I know, and so for us, that's almost an afterthought until later on. Or if you get on stage and you realize that your arms look like a matchstick, and then you're like, "Hang on a minute." So, yeah. And then you realize how fun it is to bench press and how you guys have been hogging that fun for so long.
Yeah. Mm. Look, I'm all for an exercise where I get to lay down, Nick. As I'm a dad now, if I get to lay down and exercise, oh, that's a win.
Can I please just say how funny that is? Because I said, I was walking with Mum this morning and I was a little bit tired, didn't sleep that well. So I said, I wonder if Coach Steve would mind if I lay down on the bench press and did the podcast laying down.
Nobody will know, Nick. Nobody will know.
I know, you would. If I wasn't visible on the Zoom and I was just laying down. But then I could occasionally maybe bust out some reps and then you'd be in the zone.
Yeah.
So how about yourself? Have you got some?
Yeah, we've got a few this week. So the first one goes to Christine Pisani. What a last name. I love that, Pisani. She writes, quite pleased with her progress so far, all things considered. Having had a baby, I know my body has and will have permanent changes, and I can't expect speedy results when committing majority of my time to a toddler. Not a huge difference in progress photos, but I've noticed massive changes to my mood, energy, general fitness, strength, and motivation. And I love that, Christine, where you know you may have accepted that this process might not be a speedy one, even though we are a 12-week challenge. We understand that it's not a super speedy process. And you know, you're looking at other areas where you've seen big changes, you know, your energy, your mood, your general fitness, your strength, you're running around keeping up after your toddler. That's a huge win. Congratulations, Christine.
Yeah, it's amazing. And also, look, I think that in the media, I think that we've been still led to believe as women that everything needs to go back immediately how it was. And it sometimes takes a long time and everybody's different, you know, and I think small victories, non-scale victories are excellent for this realm because there's so many things that you're achieving every day. But if you put your head up and look at, say, Instagram, somebody might have had, somebody might be wearing some weird pants that make them look like they've just never given birth in their life. So, just take those NSVs and day by day.
Yeah.
Well done.
Next one goes out to a fellow lifter, Joanne Triggs. Joanne, who's also a powerlifter right now, she writes, it's snug, but it fits. And she's got a photo of her belt and her lifting belt. And she writes that the belt has come in a notch after being let out way back in January last year. We'd love to bring it in one more time before the end of the 12 weeks. And what she's done is her lifting belt, she's had to bring it in an extra notch. So congratulations, you're now leaner and you have to bring the belt in closer. And that's always a win when you have to, when that belt doesn't stretch, right? It's the same, circumference around. It's not like our, you know, pants that we wear, where there's a little bit of stretch in some of our pants and our clothing, but that lifting belt, you know, it's made so that it doesn't stretch. And if she's had to bring it in, well, that really highlights that the body's changing. So that's a huge NSV, Joanne.
Well done, Joanne. Love it. Good on you.
And last one here goes out to Tanya Kortik. And I like this one. It's a really cool one. She goes, big hashtag NSV for me today. My cholesterol overall pre-Maxine's was 7.8, which is a little bit high. Almost had to go on meds, but I talked him into waiting 6 months. My next result was 6.9 and then 6.2. And he couldn't believe it. He, I'm assuming, was the doctor. Then today it was 5.1. He said, I'm the healthiest and fittest chick in town. Love it. I think when signing up, my why was to age healthily, but it looks like I'm on the right track. And I love that, Tanya. So I think Tanya is a big member within the over 50s forum thread. So if you're listening to this and you are over 50, go join the crew there in that forum group. And I think Tanya here is displaying a huge win where her cholesterol has gone down, you know, almost 3 points since starting the challenge. So congratulations to her and congratulations to all of our NSV participants this week. I'm sure that there were many NSVs over the weekend as we were completing our week 4 check-in and posting, you know, some transformation photos. So if you're not featured this week, you know, it doesn't mean that you're not an NSV. So, I'm proud of everybody who's putting the effort to highlight NSVs. Keep doing the good work, and we're always excited to see them.
Absolutely. I think NSVs are a key part of our community, and I love the fact that everybody shares it and everybody feels comfortable within our group to share everything. It's fantastic. It really inspires me.
So good. Nick, let's move on to our Coach's Corner, where we offer our tip for the week. Nick, take us away. What advice do you have for us?
All right. I'd love to chat a little bit about coffee today, about caffeine, about our friend. Now, let me just start with just a little bit of a Coach Nick story. So way back many years ago when I first started training, I would train with my coach and then we'd go and have a nice coffee together. And I would be lifting what I thought was pretty heavy, and that was my reward. So I kind of became a little bit of a response automatically after training to have a coffee. So I didn't really think much about it, no idea, didn't do much research, just was very much somebody that just did whatever I felt like doing. Also in the triathlete community, it was all about caffeine, you know, and getting up early. And being a mum, it's just like caffeine, and being Italian, I had no hope. There was no hope for me. So I've just been reading recently a little bit more about just those 1% things that you can do as I'm really on this muscle gain journey. I've been on stage a few times and I know what it's like to be on stage and feel like you could be more muscular. So I'm just really in the zone of trying to get a few little things going on that could help me, just those 1%ers. So this is one of those, the things that you can tweak if you've done pretty much everything else. So what I was reading is, yeah, caffeine immediately after a hard training session might not be optimal for recovery and muscle growth. So it's not necessarily going to make or break anything, but it's just a consideration. So, you know, lots of us use it maybe as a reward, or maybe, you know, you think that you're a little bit tired after, or it's just maybe the time of day that you train where you just have a coffee. It might just be a habit. And, you know, it might be a social thing. You might train with a group of friends and then go and have a coffee, but it might not be the best when you come to recovery. And the reason is you want cortisol, right, to work out. That's your stress hormone. That's really good. It's fight or flight, but you want to use it when you're working out. You know, that's why we have caffeine as a pre-workout, and it's excellent during your workout. But as soon as you finish working out, in an ideal world, even though a lot of us train in the mornings and then we go to work and stuff like that, we want to start to bring our cortisol down so then we can have a chance to recover and grow our muscle and, you know, optimize testosterone. So it's really important for recovery to make sure that our cortisol is coming down. So to do that, you don't want to really be then slamming down some coffee. So I would suggest that you wait a couple of hours until you have your first cup of coffee after training. Just give yourself that time to have the post-workout nutrition, have your protein shake, have your meal, and then have a coffee if you want to. You know, I mean, in an ideal world, just say you trained mid-morning, you probably wouldn't then have a coffee after, but the world is not ideal like that. So I would just, my little hot tip is just to wait a couple of hours until you have your first cup of coffee. So just give your body that chance to recover. And even though, like, obviously you're going to re-stimulate it, but at least it's had that chance to recover after training. So, you know, if you drink coffee for a pick-me-up, just remember that your adrenals are going to produce that cortisol, and it's a stimulating hormone, but it's also catabolic, so that means it's not going to help you necessarily grow muscle. So just think about it when you're drinking it, just think, okay, is it optimal for me to drink right now? So perhaps immediately after your training session, it isn't necessarily the best thing to do.
I like it. Yeah. I think you're right. Where sometimes we get into those kind of long-term habits where we don't really think about the effect it may have on our body. So like yourself, Nick, if your habit straight after training was to go get a coffee, you know, maybe it was just I think you said an iced coffee, Nick, was that your go-to? Were you going to double frappe lattes?
No, it was just like for me, like a long black. That's always me. If I'm ever feeling super adventurous, it might be like a splash of almond milk. But even that, I'm more of a black coffee kind of a person. So, but that's like even just an extra hit. It would have been a triple shot.
Yeah.
I don't know how my heart is still beating well.
Yeah. Because it's interesting because, you know, when you talk about like caffeine, like, you know, there's the conversation of coffee and then there's the conversation of caffeine.
True.
They hugely overlap, but then they're kind of different when you're looking at the language of it. You know, caffeine, big stimulant, big ergogenic aid through training, right? It's probably one of the biggest ergogenic aid, as in like things that promote performance. And most of us will promote caffeine consumption prior to training. So if you're having that caffeine just prior, you train for, let's say, an hour, I don't know, blow it out 2 hours, you still have that caffeine, you know, in your system for at least 6 hours. Caffeine has a half-life of 6 hours. So if you have, let's say, 200 milligrams of caffeine just before you train, you train for 2 hours, for another 4 hours, you've got it, you know, that caffeine still in your body, at least half of it 6 hours later. So that caffeine is tricky, because you're going to be stimulated before you train, then you're going to have some of that, you know, shortly after. I do agree where, you know, if you train and then you're taking lots of caffeine consistently throughout the day, you're constantly triggering that adrenal gland response, so that stimulant in your body is going to promote cortisol levels, which is just going to turn the dial down on muscle building. So, you know, this is all talking those one percenters. If you're training first thing in the morning and you kind of want more coffee throughout the day, okay, that's part of the process. If you lived a lifestyle where you got to choose whenever you got to train, hey, maybe it's more optimal to train in the middle of the day. You have some caffeine before you train. You do your training session, you know, around that like lunchtime period, and then you try to not have any caffeine for the rest of the day, so that you kind of go into that rest mode. So I do think there's lots of overlapping. It gets tricky, but you're right. I think if we're over relying on caffeine consumption throughout the day, that can turn the dial down on, you know, other bodily processes, especially muscle building.
Definitely. And also, like, this is, it can't be linked. This is only just me talking about my own anecdotal stuff. So like, just don't shoot me down in flames, because I don't have any evidence. I've only got myself. But yeah. I have noticed that since I've been a little bit more conscious of not overstimulating in the afternoons, just a little bit more conscious, my belly fat has really gone down. Now, like, I'm very good with diet. So there's not many other variables that I can really go, oh, it's that. It's just I'm getting a more restful sleep, I would say. Yeah. And therefore I'm just not as fight or flighty during the day. That could be it. Because don't forget, I'm getting older. So I technically am supposed to be going to seed. But yeah, wow. So anyway, that was just my little tip for people. Don't shoot me down. Like, if you own a coffee shop, or, you know, if you love shots of coffee and stuff like that, it's not gonna do anything terrible to you. It's just if you really want to optimize that muscle growth, which a lot of people are asking about in our groups. So that's just a little hint.
Yep. Good old caffeine, our best friend at times, and then, you know, like some of our best friends, you know, just hold us back a little bit. So
I'll try and just bring one coffee to work tomorrow, not two. Sometimes I bring two coffees and have the other one in the afternoon sometimes. You'll notice that I won't be doing that, and I won't have any pre-workout after lunch.
No pre-workout, just in a cup.
I know. I know. I'm trying my best, Coach Steve. I'm trying to live the best coach's life that I could possibly live.
No, look, I think all good coaches have a solid caffeine addiction, right?
Yeah, I haven't met many that don't. No. If they say they don't, they're lying.
They're lying.
Yeah, especially right. People like us that are, you know, actually natural. You know, it's about all we've got.
All right, Nick, I've got a very brief tip this week for Coach's Corner, and that tip is to film yourself. Okay, film yourself, and across two parts. So the first part is for your check-ins. So most of us will like to take static photos for our check-ins, and that could be check-ins in the challenge. That could be check-ins, you know, from time to time that we do with ourselves, or maybe you've engaged with an external coach and you're doing maybe weekly check-ins, like what Nick might do with your coach, Nick, where you might do weekly check-ins. And those check-ins might involve very competition specific things. Like, you know, Nick, I know you're doing your posing routine and those things for stage. So my tip for anybody doing their check-ins is to take a video of yourself. So instead of taking a static photo, take a video of yourself. So turn the camera on, come stand facing forward, turn to the side, go to the back, turn to the other side, and then come back to the front. So then if you are comparing, you know, those before and afters, let's say, you know, week to week or month to month, or quarter to quarter, however you're testing yourself visually, you know, those moving images can tell more of a story than just the static images. And that could be due to, you know, lighting, that could be due to, you know, the angles of our body, even just how like close or far we are to the camera. They can play like big parts, especially when we're looking at visual changes over time. So my advice is to, film yourself often. You know, myself anecdotally, when I was doing my bodybuilding show, what I was doing was I was doing my posing routine in front of a camera and recording it. And then I would watch the video back and reflect on the video. Okay, how can I improve? And for me, what I found was that when I was on stage, some of the other guys on stage with me had some troubles posing because they were posing in practice in front of a mirror. Right? So that's how they're practicing posing. Whereas for me, I was practicing in front of a camera and then watching myself after. So I kind of knew how to like pose without that visual feedback, whereas they needed that visual feedback. So, you know, in competition for physique sports, like what we're talking about here, that made a difference. But then also now I go back and watch those videos and it really highlights, you know, some areas that I was doing really well with my body and then also really big weak points in my body. So without those videos, I wouldn't know. If it was just the image, great, I'm good at hiding all those things. I don't know, but that video feedback was really powerful in my check-ins. So that's one side of filming. Yeah. The other side, probably even more important, is training videos. Okay. Very so cool.
Yeah.
When I was younger, I remember I was training with my buddy and he'd always whip out his phone and try to record himself or me, right? And he would go and say something like, "Do it for the gram," right? That was his thing. "Do it for the gram." So, you know, you go and do like your one rep max or something like that, right? And what I ended up happening was I had lots of videos of myself doing, you know, the biggest lift I could, you know, like a one rep max or something like that. But I didn't have much footage of me just training, right? You know, just doing my normal lifting. And it wasn't until my partner was making comments about my Instagram being like, "Oh, all you've got is just, you know, like your one lifts, like, you know, it's just, you know, whatever, like this." I was like, "All right, fine. I'll spend more time filming all the other things." So I started to set up my camera and record myself doing like most of my training lifts. And you can see that now on my Instagram. And now my Instagram's kind of turned into, you know, maybe a bit more of like a journal type thing for me where I'm kind of posting my videos. But I've got a huge backlog of footage of myself training that I don't post online, but it's just for me. And what I've noticed is there's been a really significant and profound improvement in my training because I'm constantly recording myself and constantly reviewing myself. So as soon as I finish my lifts, I watch my lift back. Once I've watched my lift back, that's about my rest time. I set up my camera again and go to my next set, right? And, you know, when it comes down to technique and stuff, like there's no real one way to do a technique, but over time, you know, there are areas that we can slowly modify and change and improve, especially if we're reflecting and watching ourselves back. And even just the act of having the camera and knowing that the camera is on you, I noticed that the quality of my movement when I'm filming myself is better while I'm filming versus when my camera's off. Okay. So, what do I mean by quality? Well, like, you know, if I'm doing squats and I know the camera's on me, I feel like a really massive pump in my legs. I'm normally able to do more reps. I feel like more controlled, more powerful through the movement versus when I know that my camera is off. Okay. I don't really get that leg pump. You know, I don't really feel in control. You know, I might miss a few reps. So just the act of that camera being on me, I know that something is watching me. My technique is better. And then compound that over time, chronically, my technique gets better. So my big tip to you, both for training and check-ins, is to spend more time simply filming yourself. You know, almost all of us have a smart device, such as a smartphone with a camera on it, and we can spend time to film ourselves. And that doesn't need to be your one rep maxes, like when I was younger and that's all I filmed, or, you know, my best effort. Now I film 90% of my training. And sure, I'm in a nice position where I've got my home gym. So I just set my camera up and train and watch. You know, delete a bunch of videos that I'm like, all right, cool, that's not as fancy. I'll put that somewhere else. If you're in a commercial gym, I get it. I understand, you know, setting up a camera and filming yourself doing bicep curls or a chest fly or a, you know, a calf raise may not be, you know, sexy or, you know, fun to do, but I do think that doing those things goes a long way. So if you are looking for ways to improve yourself, get better and reflect on your process, film yourself, document your process. And that's the only way that you can improve. And then, geez, now, Nick, you probably do the same thing. I watch videos of myself from not long ago, maybe 6 months ago. And part of me cringes when I'm like, oh, was I squatting like that? Was I lifting like that? At the time, I thought I was like, you know, God's gift. I'm like, wow, look at that squat. Oh, Jesus. And then now I look at myself and go, oh, you were doing it like that? So, and that was just 6 months ago, right? And if I look back even further, I kind of like, you know, need to close my eyes a little bit, being like, oh gosh, that's how you were lifting. So it's like a constant way of improvement. And if you're not looking back and not getting that little bit of a cringe, like you don't know, you're not improving then. Like that's the only way you're improving is going, okay, I can see where my problem was before and then now I'm fixing it. And it's just a constant state of improvement over time. And you don't know unless you have that footage or that documentation of where you were and where you are now. So that's my tip. Film yourself, spend more time in front of the camera.
Absolutely. And seek out a gym that is good with that, because some gyms these days, they even have tripods. They, you know, people are really getting behind that, you know, and really supporting that. A lot of people film themselves. It's like once you get into the habit of doing it, it's not such a big deal anymore. You know, there's always someone who's willing to help you out. If you're doing like a one rep and you need someone to help you just film that, or, you know, if you're working up to it, there'll be someone around that will do it for you. And it can also, you know, if you're training on your own and you're trying to pump yourself up, it can also be helpful just for those bigger lifts to have someone there to do that, because then it's just an incentive. It'll just help you to pick it up a little bit more. And then if it doesn't get filmed, like the other day I was trying, because I'm getting closer to that 150, I think I'll hit it this week, but I was trying to do something else and I did it and it was really good, but it wasn't being filmed. So we had to seek out the security footage, but it didn't film the deadlift platform. So if you want to rob that gym,
do it on the deadlift platform.
Yeah, so it wasn't visible, but the people cheering me on behind, where they were on film, but the lift wasn't on there, so it didn't count. But yeah, just don't be afraid. Look up Sherelle Grant on Instagram. She's really good with some tips about filming yourself for women if you feel a little bit intimidated or anything. Have a look at her stuff, because she's really pro filming yourself. So all good. That's where it's at.
Yeah, no, love it. And, you know, just to highlight again, that footage doesn't need anybody else's eyeballs other than yours, right? So if you film yourself, you know, you don't have to post that online or to, you know, show other people. It can literally just be for you to see. It's just a reflective process. So even if it's the good, the bad, the ugly, whatever it is, you know, you don't have to show anybody else if you don't want to. Of course, celebrate the wins when they're there. But, you know, again, it doesn't have to go anywhere. It is purely a reflective thing.
100%. Like at the end of the day, it's for you.
Yeah.
Love it.
Let's move on to some questions that have come through this week. First one, you can answer this one. It is, I looked at next week's nutritional info. So I guess assuming weeks 5 to 8, and my carbs are cut below half. How this be accurate? It's saying I should be on 55 grams of carbs, .. Nick. Yes. Break this down. What advice would you give this person?
Let's discuss this, because this is a very common question at the moment, because people are finding that when they open up their template or their workbook, they see that suddenly the carbs have gotten lower. First up, if we're dropping calories, something's going to drop. That's just, I'll just say that. So some ways to get around that are you can increase your activity levels, because you may be somebody who is quite light already and not doing many steps. So where are we to go? You know, where can you go in terms of dropping things? Because we are always going to prioritize protein. So that isn't really going to drop. What we're going to do then is make sure that we have enough fats, because they're very important, just, you know, for hormone health. You know, you don't want to dip below a certain amount of fats. So carbs are going to be the ones that are probably the most disposable in terms of when you are dieting to this level. So we're, you know, we're getting serious now. But that said, just say that you don't want to do that. You can look at the overall calorie target for the day and work with that. So just remember that the calories are going to drop and something's got to give. So that's what's happened there. It is accurate. If it's on there, it is accurate. But as we were also saying before, remember at the very start, if you go to the start of the podcast, we were talking about things that are quite expensive in terms of carbs, and you might not have the biggest budget. It doesn't mean that you have to just stick to the 55 though. Just remember that it's an overall calorie target that we're looking for, but it is a really good idea to start breaking out the less calorie dense carbohydrates, the volume ones that you can have a little bit more of. And just remember also, veggies have carbs, you know, things like that. It doesn't have to be massive. This is where we start to go, okay, things like, you know, bread, and, you know, pastas and things like that, they might not be the best choices just in terms of as we are dieting down. Now, as you say, Steve, which I love, this is, you know, the 55 grams isn't really necessary unless you want to get, as we say, exotically lean. And if you want to, then you might want to bring that in. So if you want to live in the zoo of lean where people come and visit you and pay money, or you pay money to go on stage, you pay your own money to go on stage and be exotically lean, then that's fine. Otherwise, that is just a guideline, and certainly you don't have to stick to that for great results at all, just as long as you stick to the overall calorie target.
Yeah, I did want to touch that. Like, on our nutrition workbook, it's been designed to cater for the wide range of challenges that we have in the challenge. You know, we have some individuals who are super lean and they're trying to get super, super lean. And we have some individuals who, I would say in the nice way, are more fun sized and they're trying to become more regular sized. Okay. So we do have a range of individuals in the challenge, and that information found on the top right hand corner is what we would determine as quote optimal macronutrient ratios. Do you need to follow optimal macronutrient ratios? No, you don't have to follow optimal. We're talking about, you know, 98% effectiveness or 99% effectiveness. If you're an individual who is like, you know, a Coach Nick out there who is trying to become more exotically lean, where, you know, there's sub 20% body fat for women, or, you know, sub 10% body fat for guys, okay, we might need to start being more precise with our macronutrient prescription, you know, making sure that we are hitting optimal protein, optimal fats, then optimal carb intake. But for many of us, you know, the 90% of those of us in the challenge, you know, we don't need to worry about our macronutrients. We need to mainly focus on our overall caloric intake, number one. And then priority number two, we want to worry about our protein. Most of us are getting, you know, adequate protein, especially if you're following the nutrition workbook. And then priority number, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 would be to be like, okay, how many fats am I getting? How many carbs am I getting? So look, the answer to this question here, the crux of it is, hey, you know, now that we're getting further into the challenge, we are getting further into a calorie deficit. Those calories need to come from somewhere. Mm. And we can't reduce our protein. We can't reduce our fats. It needs to be the carbohydrate. And yeah, we are constantly going on, Nick, constantly trying to abolish carbophobia. But it does get to a point where there is elements where we go, okay, well, those carbs need to come down because our calories need to come down. And like you said, Nick, there might be ways that you can increase your step count. And that's two parts of that conversation. Either we're increasing our energy expenditure or decreasing our energy intake. So if you want to increase your step count, then hey, you probably get to eat a little bit more, which is always a win.
That's right. And that's where, like, if we were coaching someone individually, you'd sit them down and you'd say, okay, you've got a choice here. Would you like to do a little bit more activity, or would you be happy to drop those calories at this point? And so, because we can't speak to you all individually, that's a question you're going to have to ask yourself. And this is where the crossroads comes in. And this is where, I suppose, the grind begins in the diet phase. And this is that bit where you kind of decide what you're going to do.
Love it. Nick, next question here. It's been 4 weeks and I can't see muscle growth. Mm. Do I give up? So I'm sure this individual didn't write those words verbatim, but, you know, the super summary is, it's been 4 weeks. I can't see muscle growth. Do I give up? My answer to this is no, don't give up. Don't give up yet. Most muscle building phases last from at least 6 weeks up to 18 weeks plus. So, you know, we've barely reached that kind of minimum threshold where most muscle building phases at a minimum last. Okay. So I want you to go a little bit longer before you think about, quote, giving up. Okay. I will invite you to remember that muscle building is hard. Muscle building is a lot of work, and muscle building, you know, does take time. Okay. We're trying to add more body tissue to our body, and that does take time. For, you know, some beginners, people who are brand new to training, brand new to exercise, or those who are coming back to exercise after some time off, sure, you can see some significant visual muscle improvements in as little as 6 weeks. And most of that comes from things like neurological changes, things like increased glycogen stores. So these can cause some big visual changes to your body. However, if you are anyone who is maybe more intermediate, you know, you've been training for at least 6 to 12 months, gosh, you know, we've got to be giving our body more dedicated time in pure muscle building zones. Okay. The last thing I'll say to this is there's a difference between seeing muscle growth and then experiencing muscle growth. So visually seeing muscle growth does take time, and visually seeing it can might not always be the most accurate way to measure our muscle growth, because simply going to the gym and training, you know, you get that muscle pump. So, you know, your arms look big when you train. Does that mean you've experienced muscle growth, or you've just got a bunch of blood in that muscle? Then after you train, you do experience like an inflammation effect. So some muscle can look inflated over the next couple of days because you've trained them. An example would be legs. You know, you train legs, the next day your pants still don't fit you. And if you train legs, you know, once a week, by the time you get towards that day before you train your legs, you may notice that your legs seem a bit smaller because that inflammation has kind of been flushed out of your body. So visually tracking our muscle growth with our eyes might not always be the most accurate way to measure muscle growth. A more accurate way to measure muscle growth is through our training documentation. So if you are training and you are consistently adding more training volume, more total volume, and we measure that through something like volume load on your training template. So that means that if you're doing more weight or more reps or more total sets, you know, you're lifting more and you're doing that consistently over time, you know, that is a good prediction that you are gaining more muscle. So, you know, my answer to this is, one, it could be a measurement problem because it's hard to measure our progress by seeing things. And two, it's simply too short. 4 weeks isn't long enough to notice any significant changes in muscle, especially when maybe at most you might grow an extra 100 grams of muscle and you can't really see that visually in 4 weeks. Give it a bit more time. Wait at least 6 weeks, if not more than that. At 6 to 18 weeks is usually a guide for muscle building phases. Keep going, train hard, and you're going to get there. You're going to get there.
Definitely. And just the other key thing that I'd love to add is really start to enjoy your gym time, because that's what's going to get you through this phase of wanting to look a certain way, is performing a certain way.
Yeah.
And that's going to really get you through, I think.
Absolutely. Mm. Next question here, Nick. Do I need to change my training split for the next phase? Nick, what advice do you have for this person?
All right. So with the next phase, so this is your week 5 to 8 template, you can keep it all the same. So just say you were doing push-pull legs and you like doing that. There is absolutely no need to change. There's absolutely, as we also touched on this earlier on as well. So there's plenty of things that you can do within that template to change, as in progress with the exercises that you are already doing. But yeah, just say that you are doing a bench press and you want to change. I would probably do something like change to maybe a dumbbell dumbbell chest press, something like that, you know, within the same muscle group. I wouldn't mix it up too much in terms of the muscle groups that you're hitting, especially if you're seeing success. I think this particular person was saying, I'm really loving the program. There's no need, you know, it's there for variety if you want it, because some people absolutely love to mix it up. As long as you're still hitting that training volume, you'll be sweet as. I would recommend, say, for something like your tone and shape, just say you're doing the circuits, that's a good thing to change. You know, if you want a little bit of variety, those sorts of things are always good to shuffle up. And, you know, because your body adapts quite quickly in that HIIT kind of a context, that's something that you could go, okay, I'm a little bit sick of doing, you know, M1 circuit, maybe I'll change it to something else. And that might be something that you could add a little bit of variety to. But to your core training, I'd say just keep going as you are, but obviously explore the options and see if there's anything else that appeals to you as well, because the volume's all there. It's all calculated for you. So that's the good thing about this program.
No, good advice. Good advice. Last question here, Nick. My left quad seems to be more muscly and has a significant muscle line, whereas my right doesn't seem to be showing the same progress. Should I drop the weights back to try and focus on this leg doing its equal amount of work? I don't think I have any single leg quad exercises selected. I do machine leg extensions and leg press, which may be easy to favor a leg, as well as squats and deadlifts and hammies. Okay. So this is actually a common question, usually about muscle discrepancies or, you know, unequalness between different sides of our body. And it happens, you know, we're humans and most of us are, you know, right-handed or left-handed or right-footed or left-footed. And that can play a part in, you know, the amount of stimulus we get on a muscle group. Okay. So this individual is experiencing that their left quad seems to be more muscly and more significant where in their right leg. In the longer post, they actually highlight that they're right-legged. And that's actually a common thing where we see where, you know, if you were to compare your hands right now, like I personally am right-handed. So when I go to do a task that is very fine motor skilled, I don't know, I'm going to pick up this pen on this table. It doesn't take much coordination because I'm right-handed. I can pick it up. Whereas if I go to do it with my left hand, I need to take more coordination and end up using more muscle to do the same movement. So what tends to happen is that individuals who are right-handed will actually have more muscle on their left arm than their right arm. So if you grab the measurement, you actually see some individuals with bigger left arms than right arms, even though they're right-handed, because the right hand has more coordination. And this might be what's happening with this individual, where they're right-footed and they have, you know, visibly more muscle on their left, because to do the same movement, their body requires more muscle than on their right leg. So that's the theory. But within, physique sports, right, we're trying to make the muscles the same size. All right. Well, what can we do to achieve that? The first one is what this individual said, is that they don't do any single leg exercises. And my tip will be to introduce a single leg variation, a unilateral variation, uni meaning one and lateral side. So unilateral, one side. So that could be like a lunge. It could be a single leg press. If you're fancy, you could do like a single leg squat, like a pistol squat. For your arms, you know, we love dumbbells because we can grab hold of them in each hand. So, you know, you could start doing things like dumbbell bicep curls, dumbbell tricep extensions, you know, dumbbell presses. You know, it really challenges both sides at the same time. Okay, so that's the first thing, is to introduce single leg activities. Then the question usually follow-ups after that of, okay, well, which side do I do first? And, you know, I can normally do more weights or reps with one side. Should I cut the weight down and do it the same on the other side? Okay, so to answer that, I know that my right leg is weaker than my left leg because of a previous ACL reconstruction of my right leg. So for me, I always do my right leg first before my left leg. So then, you know, while my body's feeling fresh, you know, I haven't challenged my cardiovascular system or my nervous system or anything, I would do like lunges with my right leg until I reach a point where I can no longer do any lunges. So I reach that technical failure on my right leg. And then I try to equal that on my left leg, my more dominant leg. And usually that's actually an easier process for me personally. So my advice, start with the right leg, then the left leg. Or for this individual, same thing, you know, their right leg doesn't have as much muscle as their left. So start with the right leg, we're doing lunges or whatever movement we're doing, and then we do our left leg. Do we need to change the load? There's no right or wrong. I would say keep the load the same so that we get a similar stimulus on both legs. There's no point grabbing, you know, 10 kilos for the right leg and then 20 kilos for the left leg, because you're just going to be adding to that muscle discrepancy between the two. Okay. My last tip, which is similar to my coach's corner tip, is to spend some time filming yourself. You may notice that, you know, when you're doing things like squats, if you were to film yourself maybe from directly behind or directly in front, you can start comparing your right and left leg. And you may find that there's a nice rotation that's happening, or maybe there's a hip tilt that's happening, or something really funky where you're going, whoa, like, why is my right leg doing that? My left leg's not doing that. Okay. Then you may find that, hey, okay, well, if I just focus on my right leg and make sure that that's pushing out the same as my left leg, then you might start to feel a bit of a difference. And, you know, I can relate to that, because even just recently, I was filming myself from behind with a heavier load. And often when we go heavier, that's when the weaknesses start to play out. So what I saw was that as I was going through my lift, my left leg was nice and strong. My right leg really wanted to start caving in and started to cause my pelvis to twist. So once I acknowledged that, I was like, whoa, I didn't know that that was happening. I focused on pushing my right leg out, and then that solved my problem. So just me visually seeing that, reflecting it, would have made changes to the way that that leg was working. So to answer this question here, one, introduce single leg or single arm exercises if you notice that discrepancy. Two, start with the less dominant side or the weaker side first, and then try to do the same reps with the stronger side. And then three, film yourself, because it might be blaringly obvious the differences in the approach you take between each one of your limbs, okay? And then the final part, the comma part, is that it can be very normal to have different sized limbs. That can be very normal, and it's not a bad thing if you have different sized limbs. However, in physique sports, that's one of the goals, is to make ourselves more symmetrical. So I get it. Don't stress if your muscles are not the same size as well.
Definitely, definitely. I think it's a... You know, welcome to bodybuilding in a way.
Yeah.
That's what everybody's trying to do. But yeah, you need to work on it also, just for any kind of sports, I suppose. And but we're all working on it. That's just all of us have that. So well done.
Yeah. If you didn't have any asymmetries in your body, I don't know, would you even be human? All right.
You would be Chris Bumstead, yeah?
Yeah, but hey, even him, you know, if you sat there with a fine tooth comb, you could find muscle discrepancies, even though he is a pro level bodybuilder, right? Exactly. So it's super normal. And it even just comes down to like simple insertions of muscles. Like, you may have someone who is, you know, training perfectly and their muscle is exactly the same size both sides, but they have different attachment points into bones. And it's like, all right, those muscles will never look the same because they are structurally different. So that's a very normal thing to happen. So if you do notice some changes like that, you know, you're not a bad person. You're not, you know, anything weird. You're probably more normal that you have that than if you don't.
Yeah. And I think it actually just shows that next level of awareness about your training. Once you start to become conscious of that sort of thing, it's sort of like, well, that's good.
Yeah.
Well done. Yep.
And some individuals, especially, let's say, if you've been coaching, if you are a PT, and I'd say more so in the industry I'm at as an osteopath, I see lots of bodies, right? Mm. And, you know, sometimes I'll highlight to physique athletes and like, hey man, like your right pec is bigger than your left pec. And, you know, these guys will be like, oh geez, I didn't even notice that. I'm like, well, okay. Like, I don't mean that as an offensive thing. It's just an observation that I'm making. And then they go, oh yeah, no, thanks. So they take it as a very positive thing that they now notice these things. So sometimes you don't notice on yourself. If you've got a keen eye, you can notice it on other individuals. And, you know, depending on that person, they may take that as a positive thing if you kind of like highlight some of those discrepancies. Others can take that as a little bit of an offense. So, you know, be polite with that type of information. And sometimes it's warranted if it's, you know, someone who is a bodybuilder and that's their goal. And for others, you know, it's unwarranted if they're just trying to, you know, lose some body weight. Not something that you want to bring up with that individual.
Definitely. You got to use your noggin.
Use your noggin. Nick, let's wrap it up there for episode number 54 of the Challenge Weekly Show. Wow, 54. Next week, we are rocking up episode number 55, 55, Snakes Alive.
55, Stay Alive.
Stay Alive.
Snakes Alive.
So good. All right, we'll catch you then for episode number 55.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for tuning in, guys. If you like the show, share it with a friend.
Or leave us a review on iTunes to spread the good word. See you next time.